everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, we are in the thick of November sweeps, and the shows have really pulled out all the stops. I mean, every show has delivered on the preview we had in our recent issue, and I am here for it. So, Bold and Beautiful is featuring the Thomas Hope and the Mannequin story. And, you know, I think Matthew Atkinson has done such a great job with it. I mean, you know, it's like kind of a tough sell, working with an inanimate object and trying to create a spark. But, you know, he has done it. He has committed. And I am hooked. And then you have Days that have the explosive anniversary party for Jack and Jennifer, which was full of fireworks and great performances. You know, Matthew Ashford certainly had the meatiest material that he's had in years as Jack and really ran with it. But, you know, I really have to give credit to Katie McLean, who had barely been airing for 2 weeks before she had to play Jennifer's like emotional devastation at learning Jack cheated. And, you know, it really illustrated why shows hire proven vets, because you really need someone who can hit the ground running like she did. And, you know, it also shows why they needed a recast when Missy Reeves couldn't make it back, because like this story hinged on Jennifer's reaction and, you know, her part in Gwen's revenge plan.
Yeah, you and I were talking about how on the one hand, it's such a shame that we didn't get to see Missy play those key scenes. And then, you know, on the other, how it is such a testament to Katie that she was able to deliver such a powerhouse performance. I have to say that I think there has been some really good pinch hitting this year between Katie on Days and then on GH, Brianna Lane as Brooke Lynn. GH has also had a really adrenalized November thus far. We saw a huge showdown between the Devane twins that ended with Alex meeting a watery grave, at least for now. Laura returned, and it became clear in her very first episode that she is harboring a really important secret of some kind, seemingly tied to Cyrus and his mysterious interest in her. Franco's brain tumor is back, and Julian's back is against the wall with Sunny. So it has been hopping in Port Charles. And then on YNR, we've seen the introduction of Sally Spectra, which we had been awaiting, and Adam kidnapped Chelsea as he went all in on getting revenge against his family, and Chance taking a bullet that was intended for Adam. So I feel like every show is really bringing it.
Oh, agreed. And, you know, really, it's actually just beginning. You know, I know Bold and Beautiful has a big twist coming up late in the month, and Days has a really big story planned for Steve and Kayla once Ava is back in the mix. And, you know, speaking of great performances, Stephen Nichols and Mary Beth Evans have been fantastic in the wake of the DNA test indicating that Tripp raped Allie. You know, it says so much about having two solid actors who we know, and we've been on a journey with their characters for decades. So watching them navigate the twists and turns in their relationship just becomes that much more engrossing. And, you know, speaking of that duo, you spoke to Tamara Braun about resurrecting the presumed dead Ava.
I did indeed. So Days fans, I'm sure, will remember the story a few years back with the warehouse that had the initials on the doorways that corresponded to characters we thought were dead and turned out not to be. And indeed, one of those doors bore the initials AV, as in Ava Vitale. So Tamara had heard about that through a neighbor of hers who watches Days, but because she was playing Kim on GH at the time, she didn't think that much of it. But when Days reached out to her, she told me that one of the things she really stressed in conversations with them was that of her two previous stints as Ava, the one that was really closest to her heart was the first one, where Ava was, and these are my words, not hers, like less of just a cardboard evil character, as opposed to the way that she was written later. And she was interested in going back to, you know, kind of playing Ava with more shades of gray. So of course we will have to stay tuned to find out just how afraid the citizens of Salem should be with her back in the mix. But she said that the chance to work with Stephen and Mary Beth again was a huge draw for her because she so adores both of them as artists and as people. But we'll also definitely be seeing her cross paths on screen with some interesting new players as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about that whole warehouse story, you know, it really became a free-for-all in bringing people back from the dead, you know, on Days. Like, we had Vivian, we had EJ, and now Ava. And, you know, it is Days, so the whole concept of dying is relative, so it should come as no surprise to anyone that Ava is alive. But still, you know, sometimes it really does take away from the powerful impact of a death when we know that it's likely not going to stay that way. However, you know, one person who hasn't seen a resurrection is actually our guest today, which is Peter Reckle, whose beau sadly appears to be really most sincerely dead.
You know, it's funny. We are actually working right now on an upcoming section for the magazine about characters who shouldn't have been killed off. And it's a section that, had we undertaken it just a few years ago, it would probably look a little different. We would probably say, Daze shouldn't have killed off Will, and GH shouldn't have killed off Nicholas. But here we are a few years down the line, and both of those characters proved to be alive. So death, you know, it's so impermanent on those two shows. While returns from the dead are slightly harder to come by on YNR and B&B, though certainly not unprecedented. But you and I agreed that, you know, even though Peter, I think, was incredibly clear when he last appeared on Daze that a permanent return for him was not in the cards. And I think in order to make it viable for Hope to move on, the show felt the character needed to have a definitive death. But especially with Christian Alfonso, his leading lady, likewise, you know, having exited the show and going on record as saying she won't be back, it stings a little that Hope couldn't go off into the sunset with Beau, even if it was off camera. Not to say that Beau's only value to the canvas is his relationship to Hope, but you know what I'm saying.
I totally know, because you know that the main reason I started watching Daze was because of Beau and Hope. That storyline sucked me in like literally no other. Well, actually, I don't want to give short shrift to Luke and Laura because they were my first, but, you know, Beau and Hope are the reason that I became a fan of Daze More Live. So I am super excited to have Peter on the podcast today and check in with him and see what he's been up to since leaving Salem. So let's get him on the line and get all the scoop. Hi, Peter.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Life is amazing.
Well,
down here at the bottom of the earth.
So yeah, so first of all, you're coming to us from New Zealand.
Yeah, so. Well, I got to fill you in a little bit of history. So, yeah, Kelly and I honeymooned here. Actually, I think we were a year into our marriage when we honeymooned here, and it just, New Zealand just kind of drew us in. And when we got here, we did everything: horseback riding, spelunking, camping, canoeing, rafting, bungee jumping, you know, all the things that New Zealand offers. And since then, we've come back a few times. And a few years ago, we came here with our daughter, and she fell in love too. And I don't know, we just had this pull. And recently, we figured out why we had this pull. To come to New Zealand and mostly get out of the States. We found our refuge, yeah.
I was gonna say, New Zealand was like the best COVID place ever, right? You shut down and kept everyone out.
The advantages of living on a small island, yeah.
Right, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, there's only like 5 million people here, and the size of California, basically, and, you know, or less than California, so. We're loving it.
And how about Loden?
Oh, she's thriving. We put her in an all-girls school. Because, you know, when she was going to school in Nashville, she'd come home every day. And I mean, every day. This boy pulled my hair. This boy. There was always some issue with a boy. And now she comes home, you know, no complaints. So... But she just turned 13, and they're starting to go on dates over at the boys' school, and she gets all excited about that for a couple weeks beforehand. So I think I'm going to be out of the picture very soon.
Peter, 13.
Isn't that crazy?
I can't believe it.
I think the first time you met her was we were at the studio with her or something.
Yeah, but I mean...
And that was yesterday, yeah.
I feel like we were just talking about you having a child, like, you know, yeah. A couple of years ago, let's say that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to just do a walk down Peter Reckle memory lane right now. We are going to start with, you were born in Indiana, raised in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And you did plays, you were involved in the theater department in high school. So do you... remember, like, what sparked your interest in performing?
The guy who got me into this was, in middle school, I had a choir teacher, and he had a community theater in the summer. I mean, I was, he knew I like to build things. And he said, hey, come on, join us. You know, you can build the sets. I was like, okay, cool. I mean, and it was so, I mean, we were taking old lumber and getting the nails out of it to put the sets together. It was, you know, bare bones. And he, what was it? I think the first one was West Side Story. And he said, hey, you want to come and do this? And I was like, what is it? And I got to get in fights and see the pretty girls and run around and, you know, have a gang. So what could be better than that? So I got, you know, I got hooked, and the rest is history.
Well, clearly you had quite the aptitude for it, because you trained at the prestigious Boston Conservatory just a few years later. And one story that I love is that you made ends meet while you were a student by working as a singing waiter at an establishment I believe was called Romy's Quarterdeck.
Wow, you've done your research.
Did you rate yourself, Peter, as a waiter? And do you remember what you used to sing to the patrons?
Well, it was kind of interesting because the first two shows were just, you know, medley shows. Every waiter had a song that they sang. And the third show, what we would do is the condensed musicals. You know, we take West Side Story or Carousel or whatever, and, you know, just do the musical numbers from it. So, you know, we did, I think I, that first musical I talked about was West Side Story. I did it again, and I played Baby John then. And second time I did West Side Story was in, what was it? Oh, a dinner theater. And then we also did a condensed version of West Side Story at Romy's. Oh, no, I did it in high school and played Tony. Dinner theater, I played Riff. And I don't remember what I did when we did it at Romy's, but West Side Story's sort of been there for a while.
Really? Oh, you've run the gamut of all the jets.
I yeah.
but could he play Maria? That's what I want to know.
There might be, you know, one of those plays where it was like the old times where they didn't have women involved, and you can.
Right. Well, after school, you made your soap opera debut, and it was your television debut when you were hired to play Eric Hollister on As the World Turns. So tell us what you remember about the casting process and just getting that job.
It was, you know, it was a whirlwind kind of thing. You know, being in New York City, I was a country kid just still trying to get my bearings there. And I was really fortunate to get that job. And Peter, who played my brother, I was, as with Days of Our Lives, I was just surrounded by these just huge actors. You know, they were in New York City, and they would go do plays on their off time, and it was just an amazing place. And I got to work opposite some astounding people who really, you know, showed me the ropes. And I don't know, you know, I learned what I was supposed to do when I was in front of that camera.
I was just going to say, I love that your character was, overdosed on LSD, courtesy of James Stenbeck, which is one of the great soap villains. So that's a great thing to have on your soap opera resume.
Yeah, and the first time I dealt with a stuntman, because in one of those states of hysteria, my character went through a plate glass door. And the producers wanted the real effect. And so they actually made a stuntman go through a plate glass, sliding glass door. And I was standing maybe 20 feet away when that happened. And this guy put iron bars on his shins and his arms. And I don't know what he did with his head, but, he had a wetsuit on under the costume. And he ran about 20 feet and hit this door. And I could feel the impact standing so far away. And it was like, did you make it through without cutting your jugular? And he did. It was pretty scary. But I mean, I got to work opposite Dana Delaney. She was my, you know, one of my first love interests.
And what was she like as a co-star?
Oh, she was amazing. She's a lot of fun. I've seen some of the clips from that, you know, because there's some fans who put my stuff on Twitter, and I haven't been able to let Loden, or she just didn't want to watch my work, you know, as it really came up. I don't know if you've heard this story. I did the Today Show, or one of those shows I traveled to New York to do. And, you know, they, as they do, they put a clip on at the beginning, and it ended up with Christian and I kissing. And Kelly told me Loden was watching it, and she looked at the TV, her eyes went wide open. She stuck out her hand and wagged her finger. No, no, no. So these days, with the fans putting those little clips on, I get to show her, you know, little things that she'll enjoy without seeing the romance stuff. But it was fun to watch Dana, and you know, because I going beyond that show, I, you know, didn't think I was ever any good when I was on As the World Turns. But I, you know, they put some stuff on there, and I went, well, that's acceptable. But actually, one of the producers from the show, I think, didn't he run into you at one of the award shows? And, or she ran into you at what, Stephanie, at one of the award shows and said, I never saw it.
No, did someone say that to me?
It was you, or maybe some, maybe it was Shelley Curtis or some, oh, maybe it was Shelley, because one of the producers of the show, when I won one of the Best Actor Awards for Soap Opera Digest Awards, one of those producers walked up, yeah, it must have been Shelley, and said, when he was on my show, I never saw it. And I'm one to kind of agree with her.
I never would have told you if someone told me
that. No, I it probably came up because I said, you know, I would have agreed with her, you know.
Well, perhaps that tenure was a little inauspicious, if you ask Peter. But the following year, you, of course, made your Days of Our Lives debut as Beau Brady. So you've got to tell us your Days casting story.
It was kind of interesting because I moved out to California, and I really, you know, one of those egotistical young actors who thinks, you know, I got it all in the bag. I've done my daytime. I'm moving on to movies. I'm moving on to nighttime TV. And my agent kept saying, hey, come on, just go do this audition. You know, the casting director really wants you to do it. And I'm like, no, no. And finally, they convinced me to go to this audition for Beau Brady. And I was like, okay. But, you know, it's like we said at the beginning of our conversation when we were talking before this started, it's just if you open your arms to the world, it will give you what you need. And I did. And I remember Al saying to me, because you have a couple of auditions and then you have the final taping and stuff. And I came in with my hair longer and a scruffy beard. And he had given us in the auditions before notes that, you know, this guy was kind of rough and tumble, you know, wrong side of the tracks. But then for our last reading, he said he completely changed his mind. And I'm like, I don't see it like that. So I just did it the way he had told us to do it before. And mostly I was just lucky that Shelley was there fighting for the characters. She really, you know, as she did for many years at the beginning of Beau and Hope's whole storyline, she really went to bat for us. I think Susan Hayes also, for some reason, was watching the show. She told me a story many years later about how she was rooting for the bad boy.
Well, then you get the job. And so were you excited because you had gone out there then to do movies and now here's another daytime show? Like, what'd you think?
Yeah, you know, there was no turning back. And I think that's, you know, why things work is like being on the show for as many years as I was, every show, you know, I just took what I could and made it the best I thought I could make it. And because it's very easy in daytime to just fall into a rut because you're just, you know, it's a regular job that you do every day. And, quite often you get similar storylines or similar scenes and stuff like that. And, you know, and an audience can see that. And I think both Christian and I, we just every day came in and made it something new. It was new for us, so it was new for the audience, no matter if we had done those scenes in a similar story a couple years before or whatever. And it was the same at the beginning. And I had to step up my game because, you know, those first few shows, I was coming in with Dee and Wayne and Jim. I mean, you know, I was coming in doing scenes with the heavy hitters at that time. And I had to really, you know, I had to come in prepared and also, you know, coming in prepared with a character that, you know, was kind of new to daytime. You know, there's no doing it halfway.
You know, on paper, it seems like you kind of flew under the radar a little bit on World Turns, but then you get to Days and almost immediately you kind of exploded. You know, your popularity skyrocketed, your celebrity just kind of starts to take off as well. Did it feel that way to you? Like, could you see that shift and the momentum, I guess, of your popularity, your visibility, your career in this genre?
No, not really. Because, you know, you're in the studio just busting butt for, you know, back then it was a grueling schedule. And, you know, being in there at 6:30 and dry block, camera block, dress rehearsal, then, you know, and actually Al brought me into his office one day and said to me, you know what, you've worked more shows in the last 6 months than anybody in daytime. I was like, oh, okay. And then he looked at me and he said, I'm going to send you to the doctor, get a B12 shot. Like, what? Okay. You know, he had to keep his workhorse up and running. So I don't know, you just did it. And I remember when Christian and I went to New Orleans and they were, you know, we're getting off the plane and there's this brass band and I don't know, hundreds of people there and stuff. And we just looked at each other like, what the heck has happened in the world? You know, because we were, you know, just doing our job. And then something like that hit you. It was pretty overwhelming.
Well, I mean, Bone Hope's Romance is like unquestionably one of the most successful love stories ever told on soaps. I just was telling Mara, who knows this story, of course, that it is what sucked me into Days of Our Lives in 1984. It's like my sister was watching. I sat down with her and you were in a tunnel and shenanigans hiding from Larry. And I was like, I'm watching this show. And it was your scenes. But when you look back now, like, what is your take on why this couple, you know, struck the audience as it did and was just so magical?
You know, it's kind of hard. I was listening to, when I take Loden to school in the morning, we listen to like an old rock and roll radio station. So you're getting things from the 70s and 80s and she really digs it. And you hear these, and it just, this hit me the other day that you hear all this different kind of music and some of it now is why did I like that back then? And then others, you know, still hit me on a deep level. And a lot of it I think is timing, you know, people needed what we were given to them. And there were so many things that just sort of kind of plopped into place. Days of Our Lives had the money to do the things we were doing. Shelley was just fighting her ass off to get these stories told. She had seen the Luke and Laura thing at General Hospital and saw what could happen and came in and did it with a younger couple and, you know, a little bit more raw. And apparently that's what you wanted to see, you know?
That's what I wanted to see.
And so exactly. I think, you know, then the pairing of Christian and I, where it was, you know, a couple of kids coming in and just working their asses off and having a good time. So I don't know. We were just very fortunate. If I could answer that question, I'd be a billionaire. Because who could put all those things together?
Right. Lightning in a bottle, you know?
Right.
It really is amazing, to your point about the budget, how often you went on location. so many different stories took you out of the studio, which is so unique. So you mentioned arriving in New Orleans to a brass band. What else stands out to you about that seminal Beau and Hope in New Orleans trip that you took?
Well, it also, you know, you have to give Al Rabin credit, because when we did something like that, it was just hit and run. I mean, we had a basic story, and what was going on down there? Fair World, something huge was going on.
They were looking for the prism at the art show.
No, not the storyline. In New Orleans, because they had they had all the parades and stuff in New Orleans. There was I was showing, loading some of that stuff, because they were putting up clips of New Orleans things, and, you know, and I'm running down the street juggling, and we just ran into another a juggler, and he and I started doing stuff, and she and I were running, you know, around this parade. What was it? Some huge parade. And
Mardi Gras? Were you there for that?
Maybe it was. I don't know.
Because that was a summer story, I feel.
Yeah. Like, all I knew is I had 70 pages of dialogue a day, and I was running. And I mean, things like Fancy Face came out of that trip, because I jumped up. You know, the story. I don't know. I guess I was running from something, and I jumped on this horse-drawn carriage to get away. And you know, that's Christian turns with their, you know, with a hat on or something, or scarf and stuff, and looked at me, and I was supposed to say something, and it went out of my head, and she was looking at me, you know, the way she looks at people, and or at me at that time, and I couldn't come up with anything, and I just said Fancy Face, and it stuck.
That's amazing.
Incredible. Wow.
Well, so New Orleans was one trip. You also got to go to England. What stands out to you about that trip?
Being able to ride a horse down the streets was just crazy. What else stands out? It was wet and cold, and the food really was not good. The stories you hear about the food. What else? That was a long time ago. I think that scene with jumping on the horse and riding down the streets, that's the one that sticks with me.
Well, speaking of riding, you also had the famous motorcycle story that I love. That when Beau was taking Hope from Larry's wedding, and you pulled over on the motorcycle. Oh, yeah.
And Shelley had to stop and save me, because I was in my costume, driving a motorcycle, a policeman's, or you know what used to be a policeman's motorcycle, down the freeway. And a motorcycle policeman pulls me over. I'm like, uh-oh. How am I going to explain to him? I'm just going up to the park here. See the makeup on my face? And he's looking at me. And Shelley comes in and saves the day and explains what's happening. I don't know how I got out of that, because obviously what I was, you know, I didn't have my license on me and all, you know. And the prop guys, you know, at the beginning, they were just going to take the motorcycle and put it on a truck and have it. Or it was on a truck and have it delivered to the site. I was like, nah, let me get used to it. So when we're doing the shot, you know, I know what I'm driving, because it was a kind of motorcycle that I had never been on before. Drama.
Never a dull moment.
No.
Well, of course, you know, Beau's life was more than just the relationship with Hope. And there was so much story that came out of his identity as a Brady. So tell us first about working with Wayne Northrup, who played your brother on the show when you first started playing Beau, and obviously was such a huge part of the character's life.
Yeah, that is another thing that really impacted me, because all of my family's relationships were just so powerful, with my brother, with Pop, who wasn't my dad, with Mom, who cheated on my dad, with Victor, who was my real dad, and my sisters, who were having their dramas. And it was so multi-layered. And I don't know, it was just a challenge, and it was a challenge that I just loved, because the writing was so so full. And Wayne, I mean, there again, he, just the super guy. And, you know, you couldn't, if you catch somebody acting, you shouldn't be catching people acting. And with him, you never caught him acting. And I don't know, he just talked. It was the same as the guy with Peter who played my brother in As the World Turns. I was just so fortunate to work with amazing actors. And I mean, Josh wasn't my brother at that, or wasn't playing my brother at that time, but he's the one who saw me sort of getting in a rut with my work. And he took me aside and said, "Hey, I'm doing this acting class. You want to come join me?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And, we all just had each other's back.
Like, when you look back at that time in the studio, I mean, there was really nothing bigger than Days of Our Lives at the time, where there were like super couples and, you know, that magical time in the 80s. You know, were you even aware of it inside the studio walls about how really big this show was? I mean, when I started at Soap Opera Digest, they called it Days of Our Lives Digest because it was on the cover like every week practically. But it was a really big deal.
And you were on the cover solo more than once, I believe.
Yeah, there were some interesting covers. Well, and that was good because you really you saw my transitions of my personal struggles that were happening with going from just a kid who was an agent to everything that, you know, was Days of Our Lives was, you know, pretty life-changing and amazing and difficult at the same time. To answer your question, in the makeup room, people would be talking about the ratings and stuff, but I personally, it wasn't ever an issue. I was just there to do my work. And, I look back on it and actually when this last, since I stopped the show and became a dad, you know, full time, I see what happened in the world for many years that I was not even aware of because I was just so entrenched in what I was doing. And, I kind of missed that part of music, you know, because I was stuck with Bruce Springsteen or whatever, you know. But
that is not stuck, Peter.
What?
That is not stuck.
Right. I love his new stuff. And, you know, he was very smart to come out with the little talk show that he does doing. It's really great to listen to that. Anyway, I wasn't really too much involved in, you know, I had too much work to do.
Right. It's amazing because it's a similar story that we hear from anyone during that time. And for us, you know, on the outside of it, there was nothing bigger, you know, like you were right. The big star in daytime. But for you guys who were on the other side of it, it's an interesting, you know, dichotomy, if you will.
Like, yeah. The only time it really was like in your face was going to the Soap Digest Awards and things like that, where you just like, what the hell, you know, that energy was, you know, that was aimed at, or because of the character you were playing was really crazy.
Mm-hmm. Peter, give it to us straight. Did your Soap Opera Digest Awards make the move with you?
Oh, yes, of course they made it. They haven't, they haven't been unpacked yet because I still haven't got, I need to put bookcases in this room for all our books and those kind of that kind of memorabilia. So yes, they did make it. Well, those are the awards that I really cherish. Somebody's, you know, I've answered the question in the past about the Emmys and, you know, those awards. And, you know, maybe I'm just appeasing myself by saying, well, you know, the awards that the audience voted for were, you know, touched me more than the fact that the industry did not ever give me an Emmy, you know. What? It's the industry. Why should I expect them to recognize me in any way?
Right. Well, you did have an amazing run when you first started. You left the show for the first time in 87 and landed on my favorite primetime show of all time, Landing, playing Johnny Rourke from 88 to 89. You worked closely with Nicolette Sheridan, who played Paige. So tell us about your Knott's Landing experience.
It's just terrible.
And food.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just terrible to have to work with these women that are just...
Yeah.
Talented and pretty. You know, it's just terrible, the job I had. It was great, but, you know, more like a vacation, you know, because I do, we had, what was it, 10 days, I think, to do what I was used to doing in one day. So I got all sorts of things done. I put an addition on my house. it was great. I had an awesome time. And pretty much every show you were out on location. There was, you know, technical things I had to learn about shooting a different kind of a soap. And Nicolette and I had a great time. And it was fun.
Well, you did come back. One of my most vivid Days of Our Lives memory when I first started is the Cruise of Deception. Oh my goodness. The Vat of Acid. Loved your work. So then bounced back with Crystal Chappelle's Carly, which was another like really big success. You got to get married on a mountaintop in Mexico in a symbolic Mayan ceremony. There are very few people in daytime who can say that. What stands out to you about that trip, that era of your day's life?
Yeah, that was the first time I had traveled to Mexico, and you know, for the show to take us down there, and I don't even remember much of the storyline because just being in such a, I don't know, inspirational, magical, spiritual place. And we're very fortunate to have, I guess you would refer to them as guides, you know, who were able to tell you, well, this place is where they played this kind of sport and, you know, some of the gruesome things that they had to tell you. I felt more like it was because I don't remember having a whole lot of material that we did, but I felt kind of like a tourist to be there and experience, you know, those pyramids and stuff. It was, and again, being in Mexico where it's humid, you know, I guess that's the best way to say it. It felt like a tourist.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you had come off of obviously a very successful run with Christian as Hope, and Bo and Hope, as we said, were very big. But then Bo and Carly actually also found, you know, a very popular, passionate audience for them too. Was that a surprise to you? Were you worried about, could you do another romance with someone that was going to be successful as well?
Nope, I wasn't. Not that I knew it was going to be successful or anything, because it, you know, it was very difficult for the audience to accept Bo with somebody else. But again, it was just, okay, you know, this is what I am given. I can't predict whether the audience is going to like it or not. We again, you know, a very talented woman, and we just did our job and hoped that it worked. And we were very fortunate that it did. Which, you know, gave, when Christian came back, so much, well, actually there was a lot of other stuff that happened before that. Somebody else playing my role was a little bit, I felt a little protective of Bo. But the show had to, you know, it was a popular character, so they had to do what they had to do.
Mm-hmm. What was it like after that to reclaim the role and, you know, walk back into the studio and find the character again after someone else had played him for a while?
Well, I didn't have to find the character again, really, because he was there. It was strange to me that Bo became a policeman, which I don't know if it would have happened if I had continued the role, but you know, that's what writers do, is they play to what, you know, which is great on daytime. And it's, I think it's something that, you know, benefits the show, is if they go toward whatever the actor can bring to the character and they go in that direction. And, but it didn't feel like taking the character back. Actually Ken was concerned because, Mr. Kelly was apparently pretty popular, and he even said that to me before I had my first day back. And I was like, you're concerned that the person who created this role is going to have an issue having the audience come back? I was like, whatever. So it didn't really, I just did my job, and everything worked out nicely.
Right. And if I recall, this is actually 25 years later, but I do recall the ratings spiking when you returned. So
I'll let you say that.
I'm going to say that. The ratings went up when you came back. Everyone was happy that even if Robert was a wonderful Beau, you were Beau. So Beau and Carly's romance was not the only popular romance that you had separate from Beau and Hope. You also had Beau and Billy. You had three different Billies that you worked with.
Yeah.
Lisa Rinna, Krista Allen, and Julie Pinson. So tell us about working with those ladies and just about the Beau and Billy romance.
Well, I got to say, the writers, those things wouldn't have worked if what was on the page wasn't good. The writing was astounding, and all I had to do was, make it real. And they continue to give me let me play opposite actresses that were really amazing. So it made my job easy. You have to pretend to be in love with this beautiful woman. Okay. So it was not a challenge. Mm-hmm. I have a good job.
yeah, you do.
what I do for a living is fun.
What we do for a living is fun too. We get to interview Peter Reckel. What could be better? Sure. When you returned to the show in 1995, you ended up staying for 17 years. So needless to say, a whole lot happened in Beau's life. We're talking Princess Gina and Stefano's shenanigans and the death of Beau's son, Zach, which was so heartbreaking. When you think about that 17-year run, are there things that come to mind for you as highlights of that era?
Well, again, I got to go back to the writing, because I got to work with Francis Reed and have an astounding, Beau and Mrs. H had, a relationship that I don't watch TV or daytime, but I don't really think that there are too many relationships like that. And to have that relationship with an amazing person to work opposite and have fun with, and Peggy too, just that multifaceted relationship with an amazing actress, all these people that are leaving us, those really added to the top of the whatever the romance story was going on. You had these other characters that really supported and made it interesting to watch, because you weren't just watching the couple, you were watching the family, the community, which as far as an audience, I would assume it made it just much more interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, they crossed you with pretty much everyone on the canvas, but when you look at the people you worked with, it's a pretty impressive list.
Yeah. I was very fortunate.
Now, you did make the decision to leave in 2012 at a very different place in your life, as we've discussed. It's fair to say you and your wife, Kelly, had become parents to Loden, who was born in 2007. At the time you tweeted that you were leaving and that, you had taken the place of people when you came in the 80s. Now people had sort of moved into the role that you had. And, you acknowledged it was a meaningful run, but you had a torn heart about it. When you reflect back on that now, what was going on for you when you made the decision to go and the torn heart you were speaking of?
Well, it's all, when you make changes like that, it's not that where you're at, you're not happy. That's what made the decision so difficult. But you can't really explain the feeling of having a child to somebody who hasn't. And this, you know, I was given this amazing gift. Kelly and I were given this amazing gift because we didn't think we could get pregnant. And I was missing quite a bit of it. And playing bow was, I continue to say, an extremely amazing, and I was very fortunate to have been there at the time I was, and all the experiences I had. So obviously was, you know, means a lot and meant a lot and still means a lot to me. The whole day's saga. And, so it wasn't easy to leave, you know? But I'm glad I did, because this last several years has been amazing, you know, to be with this being and watch her grow and just be part of that. It's, I would not have changed it at all. Change it for anything. I mean, to be fortunate enough to be a dad is just, and have this little person, you know, part of your responsibility, and she's already, you know, going off on her own almost. So I'm very, very extremely happy that I made the correct decision.
If I know Mara, she's crying.
She is. Yes. Now you did return to Days in 2015 for a several month run on the occasion of the show's 50th anniversary. And Bo died a pretty definitive death at that point. Were you in favor of that? How did you feel about them giving sort of a, I mean, obviously this is Days of Our Lives we're talking about, so any number of things could reverse it. But as Days deaths go, it seemed definitive. Were you in favor of giving like sort of a coda to Bo, or would you have preferred if they'd kept a more like open opportunity for you to possibly come back, or that just the character to exist somewhere?
When Ken called and said that he was looking at having me come back for a little bit, I was very much for it, because I felt that when I left the show, for whatever reason, the producers and writers or whatever didn't give the audience the goodbye to Bo that I felt and the audience felt that he deserved. To have him sort of just kind of disappear and sort of be there with phone calls and whatever. I don't know. I don't know all the circumstances, you know. He's in the other room, whatever, you know, all that kind of stuff is just was not, in my opinion, fair for the audience. They had invested an awful lot into Bo, as I had, and it was not fair. And to have Bo come back and give them a final goodbye, and you know, Ken said to me, if we're going to have the character die, we're going to have him die. We're not going to bring him back with another actor. You know, he promised me that. Well, I didn't ask him to promise. He just did. And I deserve that kind of a goodbye for the show. And I think the audience definitely deserved some kind of closure. And I came back for a long enough time that, you know, they got to see, you know, we had a really cool storyline. Could have said goodbye to a couple more people, but it might have gotten boring because, you know, there was a lot of dramatic goodbyes.
Mary Beth won an Emmy.
I was just going to say.
Yeah. Those scenes with her were just amazing. I don't know if that's the reason she got the Emmy, but those, you know, she's just, you know, again, here we have again an astounding, beautiful actress who just gave powerful performances.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did come back as a ghost a year later for a little brief visit, but as you mentioned, you are now in New Zealand. So just tell us about just the life change of picking up and moving, you know, somewhere completely like far from, you know, America, and just the culture, like, and how different that is and what goes on in New Zealand.
Well, like I said, we had an attraction to New Zealand from 20 something years ago when we first came here for our honeymoon, and bringing my daughter here, she loved it. And just on a whim, we visited a couple of schools to see if she would like the schools, and we walked into the one that she's going to, and she was running up and down the aisles and ran into the principal, what is the principal, and said, "Hey, this is where I'm going to go to school." I'm like, okay. So it took us a couple of years to actually make the decision to come down, and was it the right thing? But we always sort of felt in our heart that it was. It was just, the logistics of moving, and moving at a time where my parents were elderly, and, our parents are getting old, and having to go back and visit with them when, those kind of things. And just this last several months, we're like, oh, this is the reason we were pulled here, because it's the safest place on earth right now. And to be here is just like, wow. I can't believe it. And, like this project we just got, just sort of came about, we're putting out right now, the Christmas album. You sit around with people, and obviously we hook up with a lot of musicians, and people talk, and then you got a production company here, you got a singer here, you got musicians that play the, and this person, well, I've got a studio in my back of my house, and this idea of putting together a Christmas album came about. I hate that word, but organically, and we just did it, and I got to sing again, which I actually was a little nervous about it at first because it'd been a while, but I kind of liked it. It was fun, and my tune actually, one of the producers said, this might be, there's a couple others that I think are better, obviously, but because I just, singing is just kind of a fun thing for me, the name of the album is Joy, so what more can I say? I don't know, like I said, things just kind of organically come. If you just keep yourself open, things happen that need to happen.
All right, well, the next time you get a like move to New Zealand style inspiration that was clearly the universe giving you like quite the heads up, could you let Steph and me know? And then secondly, how can people find this Joy LP? Because it is being released basically right as we're talking.
Actually, the release, I should have known. Friday the 13th, it was supposed to be released today, but something happened with our connection with the UK producers, and so it won't be released till next week sometime, but you can get pre-sales if you go to Blue Iris, and that is spelled B-L-U-E and A-E-R-I-S. .com. You can get some pre-sales, pre-buy it there, and when it obviously is released, you'll get it. And we also did a bunch of videos. So, I don't know if those will come out next week when they come out, because they were separate, that the audio was going to come first and then the videos were going to come second. But, I got to direct a couple of them. We've got these two young bands that are just incredible. One plays like a 80s style rock music, so of course I love them, and I got to direct their video. And another was just a couple of musicians, young 20-year-old musicians that sort of fell into the whole picture. So I got to direct their videos, which was fun.
How was that?
It was, I bet a few of the directors out there that have had to work with me will go, yeah, I can see that. Because I sometimes I had a tendency to take over. But it's fun to see from the other side of the camera and really look at things and what the audience is going to see and, you know, get involved with the lighting and the sound and the set dressing and, you know, everything that directors have to think about. You know, being in front of the camera, you've got one thing you got to do, and it's pretty easy comparatively. But being a director, you know, there's a lot of stuff you got to be involved with. So it was fun.
Do you see yourself doing more of that?
Oh, absolutely. I kind of got it hooked me. Because it was fun to be given a piece of material and all right, go. Think about it and give us the footage that you think will work with this. And so it was great. Yeah.
So wait, is Joy original Christmas music? Is it, what kind of music is it?
There are 10 songs, 3 of them are covers and all the others are originals. Yeah. So the band, and pretty much anybody who was doing the singing, either wrote the song or wrote half of it. You know, they were involved in the writing somehow.
And how long did it take for it to come together?
It in an incredibly short time. I think it's been 6 weeks we put it together. Well, and it wasn't that difficult because like I said, I got the studio. Hey, these guys can come in and do this. And we got some of the most amazing singers here. You know, it was a communal thing that, you know, are here in New Zealand. It's sort of like Alaska when I went up there with Kelly, because there's so much time just to sit and play and have fun. And it's the whole idea came about because of COVID and everybody's, you know, just coming up with these groups of things that happen. Singers and songwriters are just putting stuff out on. And we're like, well, why don't we do that, you know, for Christmas? So, and I, you know, it was fun to have something to give to my audience, because, you know, I'm really astounded that my Twitter account has stayed the same since I've left. I'm like, you know, over the years I've said, well, I got a project and it doesn't come through. Oh, I've got a project and it doesn't come through. And that's happened a few times. And it's nice to finally have a project that is going to be out there and people can see it and hear it.
I mean, it sounds like you've carved out quite a life for yourself in New Zealand. Like, you've met people that you're obviously close to. I mean, is this it? Like, are you staying there?
It feels like it. Yeah. Obviously now what's going on with the world, we're going to be here for who knows. I mean, we thought that once summertime came to the Northern Hemisphere, COVID would be gone, but it's not. So who knows? We're going to stay where it's safe. Yes.
Makes sense. What's the one thing that you miss the most about the United States?
Family, mostly. You know, that I was fortunate to get back to the States. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I've had a difficult year with family. My mom passed a year and a half ago, and my dad passed just almost a year after she did, you know. And I was fortunate to get back and be able to say goodbye to them. And Kelly and Loden had some special time with them before they passed. That kind of thing is difficult, but it's brought my family, my siblings together, because we now talk much more often. You know, we do the Zoom thing and everybody gets together and just chats and supports each other. So it's difficult that we're away, but it's kind of ironic that we actually communicate more now.
Right.
Zoom is an amazing thing.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Peter, before we let you go, you know, Days just very recently marked its 55th anniversary, and you really cannot tell the story of Days of Our Lives without talking about the impact of Peter Reckell and Bo Brady. As you reflect on that legacy today, what does it mean to you to have played such a big role in the history of this incredibly long-running show?
I know I use this word a lot, but I can't overuse it, because I was just lucky and fortunate to be in a place, you know, like the timing of being involved with Days of Our Lives. I, you know, just convinces me more that just prepare yourself and see what the world is giving you, and head down a path that, you know, my Lord asked me the other day, Dad, when did you know that you wanted to be an actor? You know, and I had to think about it for a while, and it came to me. It was when I was willing to suffer, to work, to sacrifice for something, and not and continue to do it. It was something I wanted to do. And I use the example of I'm a natural athlete. I could have been an athlete. My dad wanted me to be an athlete, and you know, when he saw me playing softball with the Days team or walking a high wire or, you know, all those fun things that I got to do because of Days of Our Lives, he was like, I always knew it. But I wasn't willing to do the hard work to be a professional athlete, but I was willing to give up a lot, to suffer, to go through being a hungry actor, to, you know, working my ass off because I'm dyslexic and memorizing 50 pages of dialogue takes me an awful lot more time than it would other people. But I was willing to do that work and not whine about it. And to be able to let my daughter know that you will find that thing that, you know, you just is your joy, and, you know, there may be difficult times, you're willing to, you know, fight through them.
And if her passion is acting?
And it might be. She tends to do all her, all the talent shows. And last year she did a talent show that, you know, came up like in 2 days, and she's, Daddy, I'm going to go sing this. Oh, okay. And then I went and watched her, and oh my God, she's a ham. It was scary.
Well, she's got singing and acting in her blood from both sides.
She's got all of it. Yeah.
Well, good luck to you.
Yeah. Thanks. I think I'm going to need it.
Well, this was so much fun to catch up with you, Peter, and just hear what you're up to. And I hope everyone goes out and pre-orders their Joy album.
Yeah, I think they'll enjoy it. There's a lot of different kind of music on there. And no matter what kind of music you love, you'll find at least one tune that goes that direction. And it's great to catch up with you guys, too. It's been a while.
It has. Let's not let that much time pass next time. Have a great day, because it's tomorrow there. So. Yeah. And we hope to talk to you soon.
Okay. Cheers.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Peter Reckel for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.